Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. My name is Tom Tuttle Cunningham, and I'm your host for today's interview. I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor and resiliency expert, helping people to think, speak, and act positively through the many and varied challenges of life. Our guest today is the amazing Carol Ann Hamilton. Carol is a prolific author, a life coach, a motivational speaker, and a certified Reiki master who ignites people to live purposefully. In 2003, she soared beyond her cubicle walls. A spiritual warrior, it was time to break through the cocoon of employment and go cold turkey. Her decision constituted an enormous leap of faith. It was just one of many bold actions emblematic of Carol Ann's brand of courage that has earned her a loyal following amongst her clients, her colleagues, and her friends alike. She's written a number of books, but unlike her other books, it took 5 years for her to write Step Out of Your Sandbox, while she herself learned how to overcome every obstacle that she encourages her own readers to surmount. And these days, Carol Ann is an especially committed champion of burnt-out sandwich generation caregivers, striving to balance multiple priorities while contending with the grueling marathon aging that parents can be. Her book, Coping with Uncopable Parents, Loving Action for Elder Care, offers 12 down-to-earth keys proven to succeed with even impossible relatives. And later this year, she plans to publish Coping with Uncopable Systems, Advocacy for Elder Care. She intends that both works leave profound societal footprints. And I've interviewed a few people on this topic in the last year, and very, very, very appropriate. Welcome to the show today, Carol Ann.
How wonderful it is to be here, Tom, with all of you. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's great to have you, and what a great topic. You'll have to remind me, I interviewed your friend, and names don't always come back to me easily, about this similar topic, and then I interviewed one of my friends, Amy Etcha, a couple of months ago, and she helps help people looking after their parents and aging parents, and she's written a book, How to Put Your Mom in a Home.
Yeah, there cool you go, title. Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. And so, even with my wife's mother, 89 years old, turning 90, these are issues that myself and so many people have to go through. So great topic that we have today. And so let's start off that you don't believe that any person or any business has competitors. And people are going to be thinking, how is that possible? I have lots of competitors. So why is that your thinking?
Well, indeed, yes, I know. It's a little bit of a contrary point of view, isn't it, Tom? And, you know, my rationale is really that, you know, if we said, who on the planet knows how to be Tom Tuttle Cunningham, there's only one person, isn't there? Any more than there's one Carol Ann Hamilton, even though there might be others who share both of our names, still, we only need to know how to be uniquely ourselves. And by definition, mm-hmm. nobody can be us like us. And so that's why I feel very much that none of us as an individual, nor even as a corporation, has competitors, even though that's the accepted thinking out there.
Right. It's so much the accepted thinking, but you're so right. We are unique. And the more authentic we can be to our uniqueness, the less we really have to compete with other people, really. And so unique perspective and different than what people are thinking, but so very true in the end. We are all very unique and just keep being unique and authentic, and people like authenticity. So I love that a lot. Now, man, you have some contrary ideas here, but I want to hear this one. You are against goal setting in favor of intentions, and I love goal setting. So tell me what your thinking is on that one.
There we go again, right? There's me again, right. Being provocative and controversial and contrary to typical North American thinking, right? And,
right.
You know, even though it's been a few months since we crossed the threshold on January the 1st, I'm sure we all know, Tom, the statistics about by January the 31st, how many people will have really thrown in the towel on their New Year's resolutions. And the answer right. by the end of January is something like 90% plus. And by the time we hit March, it's like, forget it, right? So another year
right.
is thrown down the toilet, if we may say, and there we go for, okay, maybe I'll do better next year. And so there are all these ambitious goals that people set for themselves. And we all know the formulas around SMART goals and specific and measurable, all that great stuff. Thing is that intentions are so powerful for the reason that they really unmask the motives beneath our actions. So how many of us say on January the 1st, okay, I want to be better with my money, I want to lose weight, I want to, you know, exercise more, I want to spend more time with friends and family. And if the motivation to do that, say, lose weight, if the motivation is to not be fat, you well know with your work through Napoleon Hill, et cetera, that what we focus on expands with our 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And so when we concentrate on I don't want to be fat as our goal, shall we say, then what do we get? Almost more fat. Whereas if we say, no, I intend that I am going to this year become healthier because it's important to me that I am here for my family members or others whom I care about, can we see the distinction in the attitude that underlies the direction which one is pursuing? And by the way, we can always tell somebody's true intentions by what actually shows up in their lives. So we can say, oh, yes, well, this is what I intend, but then it doesn't happen. So again, we need to look for, well, what did you actually intend to occur subconsciously without even realizing it? So goal setting most assuredly takes us far. And what gets missed sometimes in traditional thinking is the power of what are the underlying intentions that are driving the actions we wish to achieve in life, if that makes sense.
I love it. And I kind of took a little bit of the same approach generally this year. Generally in other years, I set like 20 to 30 goals and, you know, you're almost content with a percentage of not reaching some. And this year I decided I'm just going to write like 6 or 7. I think I have 7. And I know I have 7. Rather than 20 to 30. And I got to that by, as you said, looking at the why and the intention behind it. And I figure if I do these 7, pretty likely that the others will fall into place. And then I was also thinking, like, I've been a gym member for about 14 years, and you have a visible, you can see the goal setting process or the New Year's resolution process fall off. And everyone who's been a member of a gym for a while, you know, we look at each other in January and we're like, yeah, don't worry. By March, we have this gym back to ourselves. And same thing every year, the people who generally go by March, we're all still there. And maybe we added 1 or 2 members, but the gym is ours again. And so I like that idea of how you're thinking on that part of it. And so very cool. Now you've knocked down 2 of my beliefs here. Okay. But I like
but I
how
like
you're
your
thinking
laundry.
Of it.
And I love your laundry list and staying away from that, Tom. You said you netted it down from, you know, 20, 30 down to 6 or 7. And that's much more realistic because people have all these ambitious ideas and none of it happens. And that's how discouragement sets in. So you've created a focus and that gets away from that trap of seeing it as a big chore and itemization annually. Yeah.
Right.
Perfect.
And as you said, you get to, you almost get discouraged. You set goals and you get discouraged because you're like, wow, I only achieved like 60% of them. And so you almost like go into the year, okay, I better set a lot because I know I'm only going to accomplish 60% of them. And that's kind of a discouraging attitude. If you fully intend for this to happen in your life, you can't go in thinking, okay, there's a 60% chance this is going to happen. Pick a few and make them 100% rather than pick many and make them 50 or 60% chance of accomplishing them.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
So now another one that here's one that we'll agree on, no problem at all. You believe that the sequence of manifesting or having these things happen in our lives is be, do, and then have. And the amazing Jim Rohn used to talk about that as well. And so be first, then do, and then have. So expand on that a little more because I really, really love that that thinking.
Yeah, indeed. And isn't it great that we have a meeting ground? But it too is contrary to how a lot of people go about their goals and their lives, isn't it? Where
right.
They'll go, if I just do these certain things, then I'll have this, this, and this. And what typically gets missed is where process begins, namely with being. And so what we really mean by being is, first, what qualities would we need to embody in order to accomplish, say, a given intention, if we use this language we have been applying today, Tom. And so it means that, well, if I'm going for a new job, for instance, what would I probably need to do, especially if I've been with my current employer for some period of time? Then probably to go out into the marketplace anew, I'd have to have some courage to put myself back out there. I'd have to have some resiliency in order to withstand some of the no's that I might receive along the way. I'd have to have some confidence in myself. So those are all being states, as in qualities that we embody. And it starts there, because with those qualities, we can then do the actions, if we want, of, you know, putting out the resume, calling people, meeting with them, going to networking functions. Those are all very active stances. And at the end of the day, with success, we will have a new role that is much more in keeping with who we are becoming in our lives, what we seek, how we wish to grow and expand ourselves continuously. Again, there's a little tie-in here with the intention. If I intended to go for a new job, if I was just saying, well, I just want to escape my current job, that's one thing. But in another way, if you said my intention is to be with an organization where I really feel valued, but also I can contribute my best gifts and talents there. Now, there's a positive motivation for going in this, to the thing in the first place, but it always started with be and then do and then have. And people miss the qualities that they could bring to the table that, if harnessed, would so much contribute to their success. And as you aptly said, this is a concept with which you are obviously familiar, and I think it's a powerhouse that people don't always take the best advantage of.
Totally agree. And some people even put the be part on the end. They say, I'm going to do all these things, and then I'm going to have all these things, and then when that happens, then I'm going to be a community leader, I'm going to be a volunteer, I'm going to be this, a world traveler, I'm going to be that. And so when you put the be on the end of the be, do, and have, they really have that be part on the wrong end, because to do anything of positive value using the most of your skills, talents, and abilities, you have to be a certain kind of person. And we've all been around people that just have a magnetic, service-oriented, amazing personality, and that's a type of person you have to become first before you can do a lot of the things you want to do and have a lot of the things you want to have. So put the B up front instead of the B in the back. If you're not going to be a volunteer now, be a community leader now, be active in your church now, be all of these other things now, you're not going to do them after you do and have all the things you want to have.
What a powerful point as well, because, yes, it's true. If I just X and then finally have this, then I can be what? Happy, fulfilled, etc. So that's so important what you say there, Tom, about putting the B up front and why it doesn't work to put it on the back, sort of bass backwards, if we might say.
Right, exactly. And now I love this next point. I would say a different word, but what do you mean by personal leadership? And I would almost think of it as responsibility and accountability. You say, what do you mean by personal leadership as the basis of our true success?
Mm-hmm. And you know, given what we just said about being and embodying qualities, this one ties very closely in my mind, because let's all conjure up this. I'm sure that we can find, let's just pick workplaces where there might be people who hold a certain position, power, or a certain positional title. And by definition, they may even believe that that constitutes gaining willing followers. In my experience in corporate life, that wasn't necessarily so. You can have the highest title, if you wish, on the chart, but that doesn't necessarily willing followers make. Because on the other hand, we can have somebody that on the organizational chart perhaps doesn't hold the highest position in the company, but yet they become that go-to person that everybody loves. You know, it's the individual that gets sought out because they're always with a cheery word. They always provide some kind of wisdom or inspiration to their colleagues. They're willing, they're helpful. They want to collaborate and cooperate. They're a fantastic team member, like a guiding light. And so they may not possess the outer qualifications, let's just say, but on the inside, they are everybody that people love. So I ask myself the question then, what actually constitutes that magical difference? And what I've come up with across the years is what I call personal leadership, what I've come to call personal leadership. And it's like that we do have. So what qualities as a personal leader, quite apart from one's title or even position in life, what qualities would that be? Well, I think it boils down to one's attitude, how one walks in the world, one's values, one's character, one's integrity. You know, a colleague once used this fantastic phrase that I remember to this day, and she said, "Did you leave a trail of kindness behind you today?" And I don't know about you or others, Tom, but boy, some of my employed life, and still even to this moment, is littered with folks who swathed a trail of destruction where they went each day, and you could kind of tell they'd been there because all these people in their wake are, you know, stunned or hurt in some way, shall we say. So did you leave a trail of kindness today? For me, bespeaks very much the personal leader that takes that, to use your terms, you know, ownership, responsibility, self-accountability, self-awareness, to notice their impact on others and to say, you know what, my commitment is to leave, even on a daily basis, my world with which I interact a better place. You know, people say their legacy, they want that to be in life. Well, I'm suggesting we can each of us be personal leaders at any time, because our part of any given interaction is really under our auspices, isn't it?
Always. Nobody in North America is being forced to think, speak, or do anything. It's all a choice in the end. And, right, I love it. You have a rapt audience there. I like your thinking on that one. Now, here's a good
Thank
one.
Thank you, yeah.
Now, you refuse to use the term weakness. No, I like this kind of refusing to use terms. I don't use the word handicap. My wife has a new title, handy capable. So I will never use handicap. And if you mention it to me, I'll probably punch you.
you refuse
to use the term weakness, and you prefer to develop strengths. And I love that. Please expand on this approach, because it's one that dear to my heart. My wife often calls me the word police, because when things get into weakness, I often will direct her into a more positive, strengths-based wording of what she says.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, and that's exactly what we're talking about here, because, again, I'll borrow the workplace context where, man, I've lost track of the number of performance appraisals that I've been on the receiving end of, where, you know, they become this long litany of all the things you didn't do well in the year, sandwiched actually between maybe one or two positive comments, and always on these performance appraisal forms, what is it that they talk about? Okay, we have to beef up your, you know, weaknesses, right? We have to address this and this and this weakness. And I've got to tell you, Tom, one of the most powerful workshops I've ever had the privilege of facilitating was sort of a strengths-based workshop. And a team member and their leader would come as a pair to this half-day session to work on not just, you know, their development plans for the coming year, but actually their personal growth plans that could encompass not just an annual cycle, but actually even span out into their lives. And it was founded on the strengths-based approaches, like the Strengths Finder book, Marcus Buckingham's work on building up our strengths. And one of the lines in there really always struck me in the book that said, you know, we can spend a lifetime trying to shore up or correct our so-called weaknesses, but, you know, that takes us, in effect, away from a point that we made earlier about our uniqueness and our authenticity and how each of us possesses our own special strengths and skills. So it's purported even in the book that by focusing on building up our strengths can be a much easier approach too than always trying to manage for or mitigate so-called weaknesses. And weaknesses is a language that is used even in this enlightened corporation. I can't tell you the number of pairs that would come in at first. They say, yeah, so we got to work on this and this and this weakness. And I tried my darndest over the course of those 3 hours to help them to reframe it to a strengths-based approach, because, again, it's very different and contrary to keep building our strengths. People wondered, well, if I work on my strengths, though, I'm already strong there. So why should I do that? Because it only makes you stronger and, in fact, better able to contribute in all facets of your life. That's really why I love to focus on strengths and eliminate that other language like you do.
And you're speaking to the choir here. One of my favorite books is Strengths Finders, and I believe it was in 2013. It was the number one top-selling book by Amazon, and a powerful, powerful book. And when you buy the book, I imagine it's still the same, bought it a few years ago, it comes with a Strengths Finder assessment with the book. So not only is the book powerful, you get an assessment with it, and I've done mine. I have my top five strengths, and I love the idea of, hey, you got unique strengths and skills and talents. Strengthen those and find out or hang around or work with other people who can fill in all the 95 other things that you are not uniquely strength, gifted, and talented for. And companies will be better, families will be better, people will be better, I believe, when they focus on strengthening their strengths. And working with others to help on the things that they're weak on. So I love that approach, and it can be annoying to my wife, but I'm fanatical about the language that people use, and you know, there's always and almost always a positive way to say something, no matter what the situation in life. And so you have a rapt audience here, because I love Strengths and Strength Finders. That's an amazing book. Like, the cost of the book that comes with an assessment, like, people should really, really just buy and read that book and take the assessment. And it's so nice to know what your true strengths are, and could really help you a lot. So nice. Those last two ones, last three ones, you got me sitting on the edge of my chair here. And the first two, after your explanation, I'm okay, I understand that. So now, what's this idea you have to work with our inner masculine and feminine in order to create our best lives? You say it doesn't matter whether we're a man or a woman, we need both components to be our full self.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You know, and if we thought, Tom, that, you know, not having competitors or, intense goal setting was controversial, I almost think, and I will admit it myself, that this one could possibly be the most woo-woo, we'll use that language, of all. Because, like, what do you mean? Inner masculine and feminine, you know,
right,
and like,
right.
You know, it's
you
really
suddenly grew a second head there.
exactly right. Third one, you know, and so it's terminology that people are not necessarily familiar with. It comes from works I do around helping people healing, you know, kind of emotional blockages in the body's energy centers. And so it does not truly matter whether we might be housed within a male or a female body. And many will deny they have one or the other half of this equation of inner masculine and feminine. And yet each of us have both parts within. So I'm going to try to give you an example of two types of people, and this might make it more tangible or real. Where have we ever met people who are constantly in motion? They are do all day long, running from one thing to the next. They are most assuredly busy. They feel they're out there doing a whole bunch of things. But at the end of the day, they kind of wonder, was what I actually focused myself on tied with any bigger picture in my life? You know, was it tied to a vision or a strategy of some sort, or did I really know why I was even going for that in the first place? This type of person, we will say, has not quite developed as much the quality of the feminine, which is to have a bigger picture for our lives. They probably have a lot of, we'll call it the inner masculine energy, running their days, but it's kind of like Stephen Covey always said, is your ladder even leaning against the right wall? That's one type of person. So high male, if you will, but not so much the feminine, which is responsible for us being able to access and know our bigger purpose or bigger picture for our lives. On the other hand, you could have somebody who is very strategic, quite visionary, really forward-looking, able to think in big terms. Yet, when it comes to translating all of that into tangible action in daily life, not so much. It's almost like paralysis analysis or something like that. I don't know what, but they just don't make it happen for some reason for themselves. So they've got all this vision, and it never becomes real. And that, too, is a loss. Both aspects are a loss. The second person probably has a high inner feminine, but they need the inner masculine, which is the part responsible for us actually doing or taking action in the outer world based on our inner vision. So if you would, like the picture of, let's just say, a couple, in this case, a man and a woman who are dancing, and they, you know, in a dance of any sort, you need a partnership. and the dance is most successful when they are working in tandem. This is what we mean by the inner masculine and feminine. So it's that art of both finding the bigger purpose that guides our daily actions. You talked earlier about the why behind your 7 goals for this year. That's what we're getting at. The why are you doing anything? And then how do you actually make it real by taking the actions that are called for? It's a different slant, admittedly. And I know that I use the power of that daily when I go on my walks and I sort of check within and say to myself, so how am I doing in both the, and the feminine might be again the being qualities that we talked about earlier, and the masculine might be well about, so what am I doing to make my dreams come true? Maybe that helps us a little bit understand that partnership.
Wow, wow, wow. And so true. And if we want to be our true, true self, we really have to use everything that we have in us to do that. Masculine, feminine, God gave us all of that. And so it's something we definitely need to use now. Oof, wow. Three questions there that were like, people are like, who the heck are you interviewing? And then three where I'm like sitting on the edge of my seat like, preach it, sister. This is what I love to talk about. And even the ones that were interesting questions also, when you see the thinking behind it, and really that's where it all starts. Think and Grow Rich starts with thoughts are things. And you mentioned the 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts we have a day. And so, yeah, it's so important to get into that thinking that you have. The goal setting one, kind of the same idea that I did this year. Be very intentional, achieve all 7 of them rather than 60% of 30 of them. And then, yeah, we have no competitors. God didn't make 2 of us the same, exactly the same. We each have our unique strengths, our unique life purpose, why are we here, and our skills and our talents. And so there's no competing against that. And yet a lot of times in the world, even with speakers and authors and other people I met, they tend to get a little less authentic than they were before they got to where they are. And that shouldn't really be. We should always be our true, genuine, authentic selves and strengthen our strengths and get around people that can help us with our weaknesses. So, wow, what an intriguing interview, Caroline. I really enjoyed it a lot. You had me thinking, you had me sitting on the edge of my seat, and then you had me thinking, what the heck does this question mean?
And all of the above, right? And Tom, I'm so, as I say, I'm so grateful to be able to have shared messages, provocative, accepted, and otherwise. So thank you for giving me the chance to speak those things.
I love it. It was one of the more insightful interviews I've done, and I like the thinking behind it. And again, love the work that you're doing, working with sandwich generation, looking to look after their aging parents. And at age 51, I'm coming across my friends and my family with these kind of issues, and extremely, extremely important. Although we live longer in this day and age, we don't always live healthy to the end, and that also can cause a lot of problems for families. Thanks very much for joining us today, Caroline. I really, really appreciate it, and I know people are going to get a lot of value and fun out of this interview.
Beautiful.
Thanks. Take care.
Thank you.